the studio gym where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. It's Thursday, which means during the first hour, we're going to be joined by my good friend and co-host, Ken O'Neill, to do our installment of the Trans-Evolutionary Fitness Radio program. Today's show is called The Power of Yoga. Okay. Why don't you go ahead and introduce our guest now?
Well, the power of yoga is what I want to introduce first, because we have a lot of conceptions and misconceptions about it. When I think of yoga, I think of the story of Alexander the Great. His troops unified more of India than had ever been done before. He had been mentored and pretty much raised by the philosopher Plato. And upon becoming the monarch of India, became bored and wanted to do philosophy. So he sent some of his generals out looking for philosophers. And they came back and reported they'd found them, but the philosophers refused to come to the emperor's court. So he sent the troops back again, several go-arounds. Alexander finally gave up, and himself, with his forces, went out to meet the philosophers. And there they were, a group of naked men sitting on a large boulder in 110, 120-degree weather of India. And they wouldn't talk to him. Their position was, if he couldn't strip down and come up and join them, he had such little power of mind and such little presence of his being that he really wasn't worth talking to, and that his words would be just so much dross. So that's how I think of yoga, is something that is dormant within us as a potential and been coming ashore for some time. Now, in previous broadcasts, we've heard in the foreground and in the background little bits and pieces about Sherry's family. When Randy Roach was on, he briefly mentioned Vince Gironda's influence from Sherry's father. I know both Frank Zane and Michael Murphy had spent time with Walt Baptiste. Sherry's family established what we would see as a combination gym, yoga academy, and natural foods restaurant in San Francisco back in the 50s.
That must be the past calling now.
That's the past calling now as I turn off my damn phone.
There you go.
So without ado, welcome, Sherry, and would you tell us about your incredible family story and how it's put you in a unique position of yogic leadership.
Wow, Ken. You guys can hear me okay here?
Yes, perfectly.
Yeah.
Perfectly.
Oh, wonderful. Ken, thank you so much for that incredible introduction, and Carl for having me on the show here as well. Number one, I appreciate all that you're doing, what you're conveying to your larger audience and bringing forward to them. It's such important work. You know, it's very interesting, I must say. So being the firstborn of the three children, to be born into a family like this, a very interesting birth. There's a sutra that speaks to that it's quite an accomplishment to come in on this realm. And I don't take it lightly. As a child in our work in San Francisco, so mom and dad, their work, I probably go back a little bit. My father was born in 1917 on the island of Oahu. His grandparents had come over from Europe. They were some of the first founding families, the European families, to arrive on the Hawaiian Islands in 1979 and established there and gave birth to a large family there, 11 children. The very first born, Joseph Baptiste, there was actually the sponsor of Yogananda, a great teacher, great influential in America, one of the very first coming over in 1920s and 30s. He sponsored him. Somehow there seems to be this lineage of spirituality, a flow, a river, something going on bigger than all of us in this whole process. So it came through in that realm. My father being born in 1917 on Oahu, his parents brought him over to San Francisco, where he really grew up from an infant. He was about 10 months old, grew up in San Francisco in Noe Valley. At the age of 17, Dad's father recognized something in this son of his. And again, Dad was the firstborn of his two siblings, and his father gave over his living room in the Noe Valley home that they resided in when Dad was just 17 years old. Dad was a natural-born teacher, a metaphysician, somebody who understood the greater, deeper concept of who we really are. So I see the family work from the very get-go being very much human potential work. Human potential development, you hear the word self-realization, and what Ken mentioned in the opening about, it's like hidden treasures within each one of us. We're a treasure trove. So it's opening up in the techniques of yoga, the great philosophers and scholars. For Dad, he was a man of self-study. He developed himself. He did study quite a bit and brought in all the philosophical, deeper understanding because it gave voice. It gave the language to what he really already in his birthright knew and understood. So he started his work there in San Francisco, backed by one of his first students who was a doctor, an MD, and who wanted to bring an osteopathic doctor, though, in more the healing realm, and understood that Dad had something very important to bring forward. He sponsored Dad in opening his first studio in San Francisco in the 19, well, if Dad was 17, this probably happened around 18 or 19 years old in San Francisco, the early 30s, I think that would bring us into, and established the first yoga centers in the financial district. And Dad had several studios going at the same time and really brought the Walt Baptiste Centers alive at that point. What Dad understood was, again, that there was more than that the exercise, the physical culture work, so beginning with the weights, activation of the weights, utilizing the intelligence of the weights, what the weights awaken within us, because it does, the mind, the body, and the breath, from the very get-go was Dad's understanding of the physical culture realm and world. That's why when you bring up names like Vince and Frank Zane and all of those, they saw that also in Dad's work, and they were drawn to him for all of that. In San Francisco, he established the first physical culture centers, and it drew San Francisco every walk of life from the social, the entire social network, all the Herb Caines, all the Cyril Magnans, but all the householders, the people working, they would come in to get a little bit more training, not just physical, but the consciousness of muscle control, when you take the mind into the muscle groups, what would expand. In the 1940s, he met my mother, Magaña Baptiste. By day, she was the executive secretary for the president of Bechtel in the financial district, and by night, a dance teacher at Arthur Murray's. And my father was taken by one of his students, who happened to be her uncle, Mr. Dexter, to a dance party. It was pretty much love at first sight. I believe the story goes that it was 6 weeks later they were married. And this incredible duo and dynamic team then continued with the physical culture studios all over the heart of San Francisco, not in the outskirts, but the very heart, bringing it to everybody in San Francisco alive. And then from there in 1955, with my father's deeper understanding, he opened up the very first yoga center in San Francisco. They're definitely recognized as having established yoga on the West Coast, Magaña and Walt Baptiste, opening the very first yoga centers. Dad initially opened the first one on its own because, as you can imagine, people didn't know what it was. And it was very exotic. It was unknown. People, you know, I think sometimes fear jumps in the beginning of some of these things. So Mom and Dad were really, there was a courage there. My father knew that it was important to bring the techniques, the deeper understanding of the yoga system, what it provides to us in techniques and outline and consciousness of who we really are, forward. So they took this big step in 1955, the big Asian Art Museum, Smithsonian. They just had a huge exhibit in San Francisco where my parents were honored. I was asked to speak at the opening. They had a huge size portrait of my father, Walt Baptiste, in the entry of the Asian Art Museum, a very successful exhibit that was attended by many there. But it also really introduced the quality of understanding that these are giants.
I hate to do this. We've actually I didn't want to interrupt you, but I have to interrupt you because we're going way, way long on this segment, and I'm the wet blanket in the party.
Thank
so
you, Carl.
I want you to just hold that thought for a second.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick commercial break. If you want to learn more about Sherry Baptiste, the website is powerofyoga.com. Lots of great stuff there. Stay tuned. You're listening to Transevolutionary Fitness Radio here on the Superhuman Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Well, first off, I really want to advise listeners to go to Sherry's website, powerofyoga.com, and select the entry on story. There you'll see a photo of a 3-year-old version of Sherry doing yoga and more of the story. Her book also has photos and more of the story. Her book is Yoga with Weights for Dummies, which we'll be talking about in a bit. However, the Baptiste heritage is unique. I recall years ago wondering why it was Buddhist sutras about the awakener, the bodhisattva, always were addressed to sons and daughters of virtuous families. With Sherry, talking to her the other day and on the interview, reading her material, I now understand that reading always shows. And please, Sherry, continue with your story. And could you focus some on what it was like growing up Baptiste?
Wow, Ken, thank you so much. It was really, once again, an incredible thing in San Francisco, the heart of this amazing, beautiful city, to see these parents who, number one, were absolutely gorgeous, just beautiful. They were so physically and energetically and personality just alive. And they were really coming forward authentically, both of them and as a couple, in who they really were. I observed as a child, I'm very much an observer, and I learn from observation and subtleties of qualities in all walks and realms of life. And what I observed as a child in these San Francisco centers were people coming up, just filing in through the doors opening to them, coming up through the steps or into the entries of all walks of life. I saw that the work that was going on within the family was, it met everybody, all walks of life. It didn't matter, men, women, couples, children, families, it embraced. The arms were wide open to everybody, and people filtered in on all these different levels. And what I saw in these people, number one, that drew me to the practicality and how practical this work was for people, is they were dealing with life, its real challenges that we all know. They weren't sweeping them under the carpet, but they were living in a realm that they actually looked happy to me. They looked happier. They looked like they were being given the space and the training and the techniques to actually go out in the world and be who they were really born to be. So that was a huge thing for me as a child. And again, then also growing up in San Francisco, a San Francisco kid with all my friends and going to the schools, I saw it was just simply very practical. It really was practical in daily living. It didn't take us away, turn us away from life. It brought us into life fully, allowing life to also meet us halfway. I just saw people in all their creative juice and their professional juice and their personal lives thriving and looking happy. I mean, that's a very attractive thing when you see people looking as if they're more fully alive, looking their best, and feeling their best in life. So as a child, again, observing all of this, I was attracted to it. Also the lifestyle of all the healthy eating, the way we ate, the consciousness about it, without it being really forced on us or imposed on us, I also quickly observed that what was being taught and what we were just living and breathing in our home and in our daily life and all these fabulous people around us, this was a lifestyle. This is taught, all the Baptiste family work, the last 70 years really in America's culture, is really a lifestyle practice. It's a practice of living life fully and then bringing in all these vibrant health, nutritional. My dad was amazing. He was an alchemist. He understood food. So when people would come to him, he would give a different awareness of food value at different times with them. He would go tell them to go eat something. For some, it might have been, go eat that hamburger. You need to ground yourself. You may need something in that. Others that needed to lighten up, he would take them into, he knew all the foods, you know, fruitarian, vegetarian, the breaths only diets, and then everything. He worked with himself first and then really conveyed noticing the differences in everyone else. So again, he was a healer. He was a physician. I remember once as a child, actually being a little frustrated, asking Dad, I was in grammar school, and kids were all talking about what their fathers did, what their parents did in their work fields in those days. And I remember coming home and saying, Dad, what's your profession? And what, you know, I'm thinking, how can I tell the kids, you know, what's the profession? And he said, I'm a healer, I'm a physician, I'm a psychologist. He went on and on and on. I'm a teacher. I'm thinking, this is not helping this child at all to come up with a simple answer. But it, as I think back now, that's what he really was with so many people. I grew up with celebrity parents in San Francisco. Everywhere we went, my father was, and mother, but mom was just renowned in the dance world in San Francisco too, in the art and culture world. She's been honored in the New York Dancers Hall of Fame for her phenomenal work as a teacher, bringing people, what I would see, dancers from being in the cocoon state to these beautiful butterflies, freeing the feminine strength and beauty, and pretty amazing teacher. But Dad, everywhere we would go, again, I had these celebrity parents very much admired, and for what they were contributing to the culture of San Francisco. Mayor Willie Brown in 1999 honored my father with a proclamation proclaiming it Walt Baptiste Day in San Francisco. It was wonderful. My dad was still alive. He passed away in 2001. And then in 2002, Mayor Willie Brown proclaimed it Magaña Baptiste Day.
Wow.
I know. It's
that
wonderful.
That is so cool. All right. In order to get back close to being on clock, we're going to take a break now. When we come back, I want to ask you about your opinion of yoga today, and has the commercial marketing of yoga actually detracted from its true value? We're talking with Sherry Baptiste. We're talking about the power of yoga. Her website is powerofyoga.com. You should go there now during the break. We'll be right back. So, Sherry, do you think that the commercialization of yoga has hurt it in some way, kind of watered it down, or detracted from its true gravity and value?
That's a wonderful question, Carl, and it's an interesting question. It's one that I get asked all the time. I've been observing all of this, again, you know, for my entire life and how it's become beautifully mainstream. And can I give our family credit for a lot of that, bringing it forward to the masses? At the same time, it's a mixed bag going on out there. That's what I really am noticing. It's more of a mixed bag. I do teachers training courses both in the yoga and the yoga with weights, accredited schools with Yoga Alliance and all of that stuff. What I'm seeing is that, and what we know, is that yoga itself, the energetic, the form, the system of yoga, is intact, like consciousness, like our spiritual realm, the consciousness realm, the yogas on that, you know, in that realm, it's intact. And that holds to the qualities and the truth and all that it is. With time, however, though, yoga shapeshifts itself actually to meet our needs of the current time. And I'm all for that. I think that's, again, why I was drawn to the practicality, pragmatic, and how real life these teachings really are, the techniques and system that applies to our daily living. What I've observed and what I'm hearing, because people bring a lot of comments to me from all over. I teach all over the country at the conferences, both fitness and yoga. I teach internationally. I take groups out into the world. And people come to me and there are concerns. And the concerns are that the injury rates from people going to what is called a yoga class have increased. They've increased quite dramatically, maybe fourfold what they were a few years ago. People are still, what they're being provided with is a very trendy, a very popular workout, which is great. We love the workout, you know. I mean, we feel good from it. It gets the endorphins and the serotonin, as we all know, all the oxytocin. We feel good, whether it's a workout with weights or with yoga. There's some walking. It changes our chemistry inside, our rhythms inside. So people are drawn to the yoga workout. It's a high trend right now, all over the place, and the classes can be packed. And they're fun. People are having fun. We have an amazing world of yoga music. I know many of the musicians, phenomenal sounds. But what's happening in that process and what is being brought to me as information and what I'm observing is that there's a loss of the deeper realm of dimension that really is on the personal development levels. They're not getting that. They're getting a tunnel view. They're getting a quick fix. They're getting that, you know, juice of a class, and I totally get that. I think that's great, but it's limited, and they don't know what they're not getting, and they don't know what they don't know yet. And so my concern is in that they take it on just as another trend or class to take, and what I'm finding, a lot of the people drawn to it, and there's, you know, as we know, there's different, we evolve with each decade differently. I've experienced it myself in my life. You know, when you're in your teens and your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, there's this different evolution into the 60s, 70s, and rites of passage. They're phenomenal opportunity with each decade. There's a process within the yoga system that addresses that in all of us. So I think in the 20s, the workout, and the teens, the workout process is what is needed to help organize the energies that are all over the place, to pull them together. But then you see older people, more in 30s, 40s, 50s, and on, sometimes doing the workout level, and unless they have the consciousness within themselves to be conscious that that is more of a workout class and to bring in the awareness of breath, the dimension of the mind and action, and making it more of a moving meditation, well, then what they're doing is doing another process that is keeping them distracted from their real work, which is found within. And when I talk to people, and I work in San Francisco here, Marin County, Bay Area, we have a lot of, you know, there are a lot of people, very wealthy people. When I work with them as private clients, and they're fabulous, and I love it that they bring me in, but I'm finding a group that may have all the money in the world, but they're not happy. They're just not happy. So there's still this baggage that they've been carrying around, or they have not been willing until now when they bring me in to start to begin to look gently, consciously through the breath practices at the different layers, the different codes.
Can I break in there a minute with a comment? What you're saying about yoga, yeah, I can apply to the world, the fitness world. I can apply to what I've seen in Buddhism, what I've seen in metaphysics. I think it's a phenomenon that is pervasive. And one piece of understanding I've gotten from India and China, you know the words moksha and mukti and vimoksha, vimukti, and so on. What we're looking at in a deeper sense is a pathway or a journey to waking up. Fine. In practical terms, there's a rule of thumb that I've run into all over the East. 12 years. Why 12 years? the idea is that whether you're doing Zen or yoga or something like that, there's kind of a rule of thumb that there's a growing up and a maturation that occurs. And we live in a culture that it does not tend to emphasize development of character. We are more oriented toward now. The fitness industry is driven by now. It has no sense of history and does very little to develop character. Whereas when you get into yoga, and you see, this is the one point, a place I think per force of having grown up in it, it's always been your world. But those of us that come from the outside have a lot of growing up to do that you were just kind of blessed with naturally as being your household. So the stabilization of any of these pathways is an individual matter that takes time.
A lifetime, Ken. That's a great
right.
point. That's exactly it. This is a lifetime process of who we really are. And to bring forward, you know, if you begin to get this training in your earlier years and it builds and there's an understanding, and if you're with teachers, so it brings it back to instructors and teachers and what's going on in the world right now with yoga, you know, not to water it down, to bring forward. So I think a lot of the teachers teaching today are absolutely well-meaning. They're having fun. This is an amazing trend. It puts them on a pedestal. But I encourage the teachers, the instructors, and there's a difference between instructors and teachers, to really continue in their own interpersonal journey, to continue, if there are any of you hearing me, to really continue in your own personal study, work with the levels of your own personal development first so that you can bring that forward to your students. My concern in the yoga world is that many people touch yoga, what is called yoga today, in the popular classes. I mean, I give popular classes, but there are, you know, the workout kind of classes only, and there's still, it's just more distraction. It holds them in the place for a little while, and then they leave, and they still have not worked with the stress management, the development of going into the deeper, some of the deeper holds, the deeper techniques, and doing the work of the mind.
We need to remember that yoga comes from the verb yug, which means to direct, to guide, to orient.
I'm going to be the yug right now. I'm going to direct. And I'm going to direct us to a commercial break. And when we come back, I want to talk about some upcoming events that Sherry has for those who are in the area. You're listening to Trans Evolutionary Fitness Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Trans Evolutionary Fitness Radio here at the Superhuman Radio Network with Ken O'Neill. We're joined by Sherry Batiste today talking about a lot of good things related to yoga, the real meaning of yoga. Not that stuff that is on your corner where they're trying to get you in for a couple yoga classes here and there. There's a lot more to this. Why don't you go ahead and plug some of your upcoming events, Sherry, and then I know Ken has another couple questions for you.
Thank you. Thank you for that opportunity. I'd love to share this work with others. I have an autumn renewal retreat at Green Gulch Farm Zen Center here on Mount Tamalpais in Marin County. It is the first weekend of November. You can find that on my website, powerofyoga.com, or Google my name, Sherry, with an I, Baptiste. And it's a wonderful retreat. It fills to capacity, just a couple of spaces left for that one. It's Friday through Sunday. I bring you into, I integrate the Zen training and the Zendo with the monks and the priests there. I've been taking groups up there since the late 1990s. It's a phenomenal weekend retreat. Bring alive all of the Baptiste yoga-inspired training and teaching for you. Beautiful hikes, great food. Then we have a wonderful retreat coming up, a women's retreat. I do a lot of work in the women's world. I'm, you know, wife, daughter, woman in the world. I have four children. I live in the real world, and I've been leading women's retreats since 2005 at this beautiful Jaramara in Sayulita, Mexico. We max at 38 women there. I co-lead it with one of my father's teachers that he trained. He's one of the senior teachers that he trained, Michelle Hebert. And she's written a great book, The Tenth Door. I will give it a plug. It is a phenomenal book if you want to learn more about our family, The Tenth Door by Michelle Hebert. And that is coming up in March, and we still have spaces, but it's filling and always fills. Join us, Women's Retreat. And then I want to shift to an online learning course that I launched last year for Yoga with Weights. And also our family work really has integrated. You know, my father was a champion bodybuilder. He built champions. And he held many titles growing up. He graced so many covers of fitness and physical culture magazines. He's on the cover of so many of the old wonderful magazines. My mother as well with him. They're just leaders and pioneers in physical culture, but bringing it forward with a consciousness. So when you'd walk into our gyms, there was breath going on in the gym. It wasn't this beat red straining thing. It was a consciousness and muscle control. My father was a master at understanding the nature of muscle control and bringing the mind into action in this whole realm. And you can see how that links with the yoga. And then by bringing the language of the yoga and the system and techniques of yoga and combining the two, that's when I was asked to write that book, Yoga with Weights. Wiley Publishers came to me asking me because they knew I held the vibrant background of both and could bring it together, which I have done. And I now offer the next run of the course. We're in process right now. I'm bringing a beautiful group through. Will be in January 24th. It's a 12-week online course. It has more than 40 video clips in it. I also mentor each person in the process of the 12 weeks. I'm with them, and I comment on their weekly assignments. It's a self-paced, self-study, but I'm with them throughout the whole 12-week course, as is my assistant associate on this, Julie Sawyer, so you've got two of us really working with them throughout. So I recommend my online learning course, Yoga with Weights, and this brings alive the great Eastern wisdom of yoga, not watered down, and then it combines with the phenomenal that we love so much, physical culture, the use of the weights. And when I was asked to write this book, I wanted to know, where are the weights? I've been around weights and gyms my entire life, as well as yoga rooms and dance studios my entire life, and health food restaurants and health food stores, our family work. And I wanted to know, where do the weights actually come from? And they really also, I was sort of delighted to find this because I'm known so much for my yoga work, but it's come from India. So they both came out of India. And there's an old story, and I write about it in the book briefly, of an Indian prince in Mysore in the south of India, and he was of failing health. And there's an old palace there. I've been to it in Mysore, India, and where he was an unhealthy youth. And the royal physician, the family requested that he basically go out and work with this prince to basically save his life. They felt he was dying. He was just wasting away. And so he went out. He was the image of the story is that the young prince was sitting on the lawn in a chair, and the royal physician came out, and he thought, you know, I'd better make this guy better. Who knows in the royal days back there what might happen if he didn't? And so he put a stone in each of the prince's hands. A rock, a stone, a large enough one that it had some weight. I'm imagining a couple of pounds with it in each palm. And he had him hold it, and he had him stand up, and he began to have him lift the stones, and from the breath, in the consciousness of the breath, and the mind in action. When you think about when we add weights to the body, you know, it's not that there's an intelligence in that iron weight or whatever kind of weight it is. It awakens intelligence within us, inherent intelligences. That's why we love the physical culture realm. There's something going on in it. It awakens, again, more of that treasure trove within each one of us. So it brought him up. He started moving repetitively. If you think of the early Indian clubs, you know, the wooden clubs you saw being lifted, they got him moving in different directions. And the story went on to say that the muscle wasting, the lack of a vital force, so it enhanced his metabolism. Metabolism is a measurement of what? Life force. And, you know, life force itself, so it enhanced, it woke him up internally from the inside out, as all of this work is. And the prince lived on, I believe, for a long, long life. So the weights came out of India, and they were brought over through the English, the Dutch, and the English into the gymnastics world. And then if you look back in some of the early use of the weights and yoga, you can see some of the similarities. It's already being combined on a few levels. Some of the greats, Krishnamacharya, if you study some of these, they were utilizing, he's the father of yoga in India in the south. There's much more going on in the north of in India too in yoga. But there's early shots in the late 1800s of weights being used in his practices too with his students. So it came out of India and again awakens the intelligence. So the yoga with weights direction that I'm also working in here, dedicated classes to the yoga with weights here, I am seeing that it's not only bringing in a group that may never go into a yoga class, it's also bringing in yogis who have been questioning weights. Why do I want to do weights? They don't even know where the weights came from. I'm educating people on what this really is. I am seeing phenomenal results for people coming into the yoga with weights trainings, personally first, and some are taking it professionally out to their students and clients. But what happens is fast with yoga with weights, combining the two, the essence of both as one hybrid form. So,
Sherry, we have a minute and a half left in the show. Someone is already a yoga instructor,
yes,
can they be trained and certified by you to do yoga with weights, or is that something you offer to people in the industry?
Oh, I welcome them in. Not only will it enhance their yoga training to bring forward to in their regular yoga classes, the consciousness of what this really is that they have, incredible source, but it will also then give them more tools, more longevity as a teacher with these techniques, both for group classes and private clients, and for the fitness instructors who want longevity in their work, the mind-body, it's going into all the medical realms. I'm approached by UC Medical Center and all on and on to bring in the mind-body techniques to the physical culture trainers there, because that is also lacking. This is that gateway bridge from the Baptiste family work that is on solid ground. It has 70 years of backing behind it. It'll carry them forward into the next decades of their work.
This is very
cool. It's a really important book.
Can they reach you at powerofyoga.com if they want to become certified in yoga with weights?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. So the website is powerofyoga.com, and I want to thank you so much for being on the show today to talk about this. This is very, very intriguing to me, much more so than anything like Bikram. I did Bikram a couple times, and I liked it, and because I like to sweat, but I could definitely get into doing yoga with weights, resistance.
Her book is really, really worth it. It's Yoga with Weights for Dummies. It's highly recommended. It's, as she said, it's an incredible synthesis of yoga and resistance training, underscored by mindfulness unifying the two.
Go to powerofyoga.com today. Sherry, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you so much. Both of you, thank you so much, and all the great work you're doing.
Take care. And then, of course, my good friend and co-host, Ken O'Neill, thanks for putting this together today.